welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for April 10th. I'm John Gibson, and with me as usual is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well, John. We've had a long, busy day today.
A long day. My voice is raspy, a little bit like Brian Adams or Teddy Pendergrass, but we're doing all right. We're brought to you by Shooters, but we're out in location at a different location today in Shinagawa in Tokyo.
Yeah, we're just camping in a hotel lobby for this evening. Because Starbucks closed at 10 o'clock.
Starbucks, what are you people doing? Think about it.
I know. Think of the caffeine of the world. I mean, like, have a heart.
All right, today we've got a quick interview with Craig Bozell of the Hanshin Tigers. We're going to talk about the recent no-hitter. And we're going to talk about when to evaluate your favorite team and touch on a couple other topics. So let's get started by clearing the bases. All right, so I talked to Craig Bozell this past week and hooked up with him out at Jingu, and it's been a long time since you started with the Cebu Lions back in 2008.
Yeah,
I remember when he hit a bunch of home runs, you got injured, and then you got dumped.
Yeah, he got hit in the head, and then the Lions got rid of him.
And he had a bad shoulder, too, as I recall.
Well, he...
But I think, yeah, the head injury put him...
When he got hit in the head, he was having dizzy spells and bleeding out of, you know, like, I don't know whether he was bleeding out of his ears or not, but he was having trouble walking and all kinds of problems. And the Lions said, okay, well, we don't need a 250 hitter, hits a bunch of home runs, and he's dizzy.
We don't need him. We don't want him. We don't like
him. So he went to independent leagues after that, which he said a real interesting thing before we get on to Craig was he kind of rediscovered kind of the joy of playing baseball. And then he got a chance to play with the Hanshin Tigers and revived his career here in a hurry. Of course, you know, he was 29 that year. So he's still in his prime, and he never really had a chance to play a lot. So the Tigers gave him a second chance in Japan, and have been very happy they did.
Yeah, I think they are happy. He's happy. He seems to be happy, except for the fact that he might be playing a lot of outfield this year. But he's ready to take on the challenge. He didn't think that it was going to be something.
He didn't seem unhappy about it, though. He seemed like, wow, I got a job.
Well, yeah, but I mean, let's be serious. That's not going to be he's not going to be great defensively at it, and it's going to take some time for him to adjust to it.
Well,
and
you
don't know when you come to the park each day, or maybe I don't know how they're going to handle it, but whether he's playing in the outfield or playing at first base. I mean,
right.
A lot of factors going through. It's just something different to deal with.
Yeah.
All right, well, he had flu-like symptoms the other day. I was watching on TV, and they yanked him from the game. Now, by the time I turned the game on and got to their game, I just noticed that he was out of the game, and
right.
I just thought, oh no, the Tigers are messing with him. You know, they took him out maybe because nobody's hitting or something like that. But
right.
It turned out that he wasn't feeling well, and he had something.
That happened with Craig Merton last year. Was it last year or the year? Matt Merton. I'm getting my Tigers mixed up. Oh man, I need new stripes. Anyway, Matt got sick in the middle of the game. He felt dizzy, and he was like anemic or something.
I do recall that now.
Yeah, last summer.
Well, he's healthy now, and we got a chance to talk, so let's listen to the interview.
Craig Bozell, thanks a lot for joining us, buddy.
No problem, anytime, man.
All right, how you feeling, first of all?
Feel good. Just get over this little the bugs that are flying around in the air right now, knocking people on their butts. But I'm getting over it. I'll be back in the lineup tonight.
I know. I was watching the game the other day, and they said you're out of the lineup, and I wondered if they were really talking about, you know, if you were really injured or if you were sick or what, or they're just pointing you.
Yeah, it was definitely a bug that hit me, and it's been going around and just hits you and knocks you down really quick.
All right, talk about this Tigers team. Now, how do you compare this team with some of the teams that are in the Central League this year?
You know, I think it's hard to compare anybody right now, but if you look at us on paper, you've got to put us right there at the top. I mean, we've got a great lineup. We've got great pitching. You know, we didn't really add anything from last year, but even last year, on paper, we were great. We hit last year. We pitched last year. We just had some hard luck last year. That was it. But, I mean, I think only time will tell where we're at. But I think you could put us up there against any team in this league.
Now, I mean, you talk about the strength of the lineup. Where do you think the strength lies?
You know, I think you go 1 through 6, we're dangerous. I mean, we've got guys that get on base. We've got guys that can run. And then you get to the middle, you got a little thunder in the middle of the lineup, and you never know. I mean, the back end of the lineup can hurt you too. I mean, they can get on base here and there for you also.
And I know that I like your pitching staff. I mean, I liked them enough last year to pick the guys to win. I changed my vote halfway through the season. But I like your pitching staff.
It is. We do have a good pitching staff. I mean, we've got guys. We've got a group of pitchers now that have been around for a long time. You've got Sanders, who's been here for a while. Messenger, he's coming off of a good year. Hopefully we can recreate it again. And then the rest of our Japanese pitchers. You've got Iwata, Nomi, and then you fill out the rest of with the guys we're filling in there. We're going to have some young guys, but our core four are good veteran guys that can go out there and get us some wins.
Well, that's the thing. I think this league the pitching around the Central League is really good on almost every team.
It is. There is some very good pitching this year. A lot of guys have really come out of nowhere and really turned into some very good pitchers.
Now, what's going to be your approach? I know you're going to be playing some outfield. I know you're going to be playing some first base. What's your approach going into the season with that?
To save as much energy as possible. I mean, that's the big thing because, you know, it's for me, it's been a long time since I played the outfield. I've been primarily first base for the last 5-6 years, so it's going to be
How long has it been since you've been out there?
Oh, probably since 2006, 2007. So it's been a while, and it's just adapting, getting back to getting comfortable out there again. And for me, I'm not going to make the great, superb play. As long as I make the routine plays and get the outs and get the ball back in as quick as possible, I think that's all you can ask. Because, I think everybody knows I'm not a speed demon.
I've seen you run, dude. Now, talk about the MLB teams when you guys played them. You guys did pretty well. What was it like playing those teams?
You know, that was a lot of fun. For me, it had been a very long time since I faced Major League pitching, and to see those guys, see the live arms, the constant 95-mile-an-hour fastballs. I mean, it was a change for me seeing pitchers just, I mean, power right at you, coming after you the whole time. To go in there and win those two games, it was a great thrill for our team, and I think it gave us a little bit of a boost going into the season because we kind of had a little bit of a rough spring, but we just kind of had to just grin and bear it, and the MLB games I think really helped us out and got us going.
And of course you got to use an MLB ball.
You know, that was definitely a big thing right there. I look at it this way, if the league's saying our ball is the same as Major League Baseball, why don't we use just one ball?
Uh-huh.
That's my question. Why didn't we use just one ball? Obviously, there's a difference there, and I think somebody does know that there is a huge difference in the balls because that Major League Baseball, it makes a different sound when it comes off the bat. It really does. I mean, we hit some balls that we're used to turning around and going back to the dugout, but with that Major League ball, it goes.
Now, what was the thing that you remember most about that, or the most memorable thing about the games?
I'd have to say going 5-for-7. You know, I mean, I had a good two games against those guys. I mean, those guys are in the big leagues for a reason. I mean, they're good pitchers. And to go up there and get the hits and just kind of come through, that was the big memorable moment, just seeing a lot of people I hadn't seen in a long time.
Yeah, I noticed you also got a ball from ball signed by Ichiro.
I definitely had to. You know, Ichiro is he's a god here, and, you know, he has some funny, his normal saying, pimping ain't easy. He was saying, you're the big pimp here, and I said, no, I'm not. You are. He goes, but I'm always watching.
All right, but we'll be watching you too. Thanks a lot
definitely.
For taking the time.
No
with
problem.
Us. All right, bye-bye.
All right, well, he sounds in good spirits there. A couple times we had a little bit of trouble hearing exactly what he said, and plus someone forgot to start the tape recorder exactly when you were asking the first question, but we won't mention that person here.
No, you won't notice it if you don't listen for it.
But that's why it's a podcast. If you didn't catch it, you can back it up, and if anybody didn't catch it, just let me know, and I'll post it on my blog or on Facebook. But your thoughts now? What did you think about that interview?
Well, it was, Craig is one of the, he's one of the players who pretty much says it how, I can't say he tells it like it is because that's subjective, but he tells it how he sees it. And more power to him for that, and always thanks for that. And, yeah, he told me more or less the same thing about playing the outfield and whatnot. As far as the Tigers go, You know, he said the Tigers are dangerous 1-6, but you know, I have to think most teams are dangerous 1-6.
Well,
not all teams, but most teams are.
You need to be there, and if you're not at least dangerous, you have to be a little, you know, you have to strike fear in somebody somewhere. But, you know, the thing that taught me was he talked about their team, that they didn't change much from last year. And
well, Kanemoto is healthier than he has been in 2 years.
He's healthier. Jojima's, you know, he's not behind the plate. And
which many people in Japanese baseball would argue is a good thing.
Well, I would argue that, well, never mind, we won't get into exactly what I would argue, but
yeah,
you know, there are some things that are different on the team. They have the young rookie Ito who made the club out of
Hayata Ito.
Yeah, out of camp. So I mean, there are some differences, but essentially they're the same team, and they're having a good start. But
well, they are and they aren't, because what they have is a center. They have started the season with essentially that center field comb with the fast kid Shinsuke Fujikawa.
Mm-hmm.
In center field, and so Hirano's going to be the second baseman instead of the center fielder and second baseman.
Yeah, occasional center fielder.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is good, and the other guy is Kyohei Shibata,
mm-hmm.
who's getting a lot of playing time. Now, this is, I think, you know, I mentioned this before, I think this is the thing that Mayumi, the thing they're going to benefit from Mayumi having been there, is he gave these guys a lot of playing time, and Wada got to watch them play.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fast kids, and they take big swings. And, you know, this should be fun to watch.
Well, another thing that caught my ear in the interview was how he remembered he went 5-for-7 off the major league pitching.
Right.
And those,
that's pretty memorable.
Well, I mean, the game I went to, he had a couple doubles. And, I mean, he was stroking it, but, you know, he says those guys are in the big leagues for a reason.
I know.
And I'm like, okay, Craig, yes, yeah, you got hits, buddy. You can hit those fastballs and those sliders when you know they're coming. And, you know, I think it's good for these guys to these foreign players who come here who were told, like Tyrone Woods was told, hey, look, this guy can't hit major league pitching, or this guy can't do this and can't do that. And then, you know, they have a good series off of them. It's good for those guys. He goes into the season really confident.
Sure.
But I don't think you don't see the same kind of pitching. You don't see the same kind of approach.
It's not major league pitching, because they were exhibition games, one. there were guys playing against him who weren't even going to make the roster. So, yes and no. But on the other hand, the major league pitching, or hitting against the major leaguers, yeah, it's a refreshing change of pace. You know, it's something he's more accustomed to, is the style of pitching. You know what's coming. Yeah, that's part of the joy of not facing Japanese pitchers all the time.
Yeah.
Because you're in the same ingrained to that pattern. As far as them being major leaguers, it brings to mind, they're in the major leagues for a reason. Well, yeah, they are, because they have some quality. But it's also, you know, that's true to some degree, but it's also a self-serving comment, regardless.
It is.
Which is, they're major leaguers, therefore I hit them really well. They're, you know, the two famous quotes about that, which are very famous. Well, they're all famous quotes that are famous. Well, how unusual is that? One is Ted Williams, who was one of the best hitters ever to hit a baseball, saying the most difficult thing in sports was hitting a baseball. Well, gee, if you're the best, it's the most difficult. You must be the greatest athlete who ever lived. And Tony Gwynn talking about how hard it was to hit Greg Maddux. Well, oh, Greg Maddux is the hardest pitcher to ever hit. Well, this is self-serving, because Tony Gwynn hit him like a banjo. So therefore, if he's the hardest pitcher who ever to hit, and he hits him like he hits him like crazy, he must be the greatest hitter who ever lived.
Wow.
So,
yeah. Self-serving, yeah.
So I don't think it was meant that way, but it was more like self-gratifying. You know, he felt really good about it, and he was he was justifiably proud of it. So yeah, more power to you.
And we talked about how confidence is half the battle. And, you know, he's having a good start. The Tigers are having a good start.
Yeah, hit a couple home runs there at Jingu this past week.
That's right. Yeah, I believe they took 2 out of 3. I can't remember.
Two out of two
at Jingu.
First
they
game
got rained out.
Yep.
That's right. So you know, it was good for them to get off to this good start. He also talked about the difference in the ball, which, we had a question last week, which we'll try to take up part two of the answer, the non-answer to that question.
Yes. But, send in your questions answers. And we may or may not answer.
That's right. But send them anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Because we like to get them, and we like to play your voice. But anyway, he talked about the ball and the difference in the ball. And,
yep.
certainly that seems to be making, I don't know, some kind of impact. Now, I know runs are not down the way they were last year exactly.
I can't comment on that yet. I'm still wrangling with my dad.
Well, it's only been about 10 days, yeah. Maybe 10 games. We don't even have enough games to look at, but it would be interesting because we've seen so many well-pitched games, which brings me to our next topic, which is Kenta Maeda and his no-no.
Oh, no.
How awesome was that, man? The first thing I noticed when he had a no-no going was, or the first thing I thought was, oh, God, the poor Bay Stars.
Yeah, well, that was
That's
the thing.
That's the first thing I thought.
Yeah.
And, I was rooting for them to get a hit, and it just didn't happen for them. So yeah. Then, you know, when the ninth inning rolls around, you just see how it unfolds. It was really exciting to watch.
Yeah. Well, I know that the Bay Stars didn't score for a whole bunch of innings until they scored yesterday. And the manager, Kyoshi Nakahata, was saying, you know, just give me a run, you know, my kingdom for a run. And, you know, when they asked him to be the Bay Stars manager and he accepted in a heartbeat, he mentioned in the press that he'd been hoping for this call to come for, you know, about 20 years. And
That's a long time to sit by the phone.
Yeah, indeed. In fact... he probably didn't even have a phone for 20 years. I mean, it's amazing.
He didn't know how to use it.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, he's catching up with the technology now. So anyway, he'd been waiting for 20 years, and now he's probably thinking, why did I answer the phone when it came? So he hasn't got one of those things that says it's the Bay Stars calling. He just went, yes, I'll do it. The next thing is, oh, damn.
Well, I saw the interview after game one when they lost, and you know, he said, well, you know, we're going to come out tomorrow, and we're going to do well, blah, you know, we're gonna try harder. And then I saw the interview after game two, and he says, well, you know, we didn't get it this time. But he had started to lose some energy there. And then, at the end of that interview, he's like, you know, we're not good enough. We still have to work harder. That's why we're not scoring. That's not why we're not winning.
Right.
I didn't see the interview after today's game, but I got to be thinking, well, we scored. He's probably said something like, we scored twice. What are you talking about? This was our greatest game at home so far.
Yeah, they lost and they set off fireworks.
I think they had to. But getting back to Maeda, he's only 23.
Yep.
MPB Tracker, if you guys know that place, Patrick Newman does that. He did it. He tracked all the pitches. But, you know, Maeda wasn't incredibly dominating. He had 15 groundouts, only a half a dozen strikeouts. And, you know, every no-hitter needs a good defensive play behind him, and he had one.
Not necessarily, but, yeah, it generally happens because sometimes you make a mistake.
I shouldn't say need, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you make a mistake and the other guy doesn't miss it.
They happen, and Nick Stavanoa made a good defensive play. He chased down a ball off the bat of Alex Ramirez and went back to left field, and it was a pretty good catch, and, you know, he bounced into the wall. It wasn't a fantastic catch, but, you know, he made a good play.
Ishikawa, Masanori Ishikawa last week nearly throw a new hit, no hitter, and he, you know, two great plays, and it is a no hitter,
mm-hmm.
But they would have been just amazing plays. So anyway, so yeah, it's been a while since we've had a no hitter.
Yes, it has. It's funny you should mention that. Yeah, well, I wrote it on the blog, so we know the last one was 2006. I actually got the cover, Masahiro.
Yes, we saw John's IC. We were watching on TV in the office. We saw John's IC recorder stuck in Yamamoto's face. We're going, there's John. He'd get his whole head in there if he could. But the TV screen wasn't big enough.
Wow, that's what you guys are saying?
Sorry. Yeah, well, that's, you know, we love you.
Because all I heard was the first part where we saw your tape recorder. That's where the comments
We like to keep it clean in the office.
I see.
Yeah, Jim Nishi especially. Bless your heart, Jim Nishi. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, buddy. Well, I know, you know, we talked about it on an episode last year, and, you know, I was going to ask some players why they think that there are so few no-hitters in Japan, and we know the answer is because there's so many slap hitters, and
yeah.
A lot of the philosophy is just to get the bat on the ball and beat out singles, and right. You know, a lot of times you get infield singles that break up possible no-hitters,
sure.
And they end up being the only hits of the game sometimes,
sure.
But you know, the philosophy is different, and that's why we have so few. It's not that there's a lack of pitching, and that's why we don't have no-hitters. But what team since 1990, since that's all the data I have right now in my hand, what team since 1990 has the most no-hitters?
Since 1990?
Since 1990.
Okay. Gee. I remember a few of them. You know, I'm going to... Jeez Louise. I'm going to say the Carp.
The Carp have...
two. At least two. The Carp, wait, the Dragons have...
The Carp have Swallows. None on this list. The Swallows have three, but they are not the top team.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah, the Carp, I remember Shinji Sasaoka threw one about 1999.
No.
He did not.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Okay.
There he is.
And then Maeda.
And then Maeda, that's right.
And the Carp have three, which would be, one would be Rick Guttormson.
Right. That was in 2006.
I don't remember the others.
The other one before that was Kazuhisa Ishii.
Oh, Kazuhisa, and then Terry Bros.
In 97, and then Bros in 95.
But and they're the not team, the most.
And the team with the most is the Chunichi Dragons.
Since 19... But... You don't have Kondo, you don't have Shinichi Kondo in there. And he threw one.
What year would that have been?
That would have been maybe 89.
Yeah, it's not on here. It's not on here.
That was the short happy life of Shinichi Kondo.
Right. 1996, Shigeki Noguchi
sure.
Throws one. In 2000, Bunch.
Mel Bunch.
Mel
yeah.
Bunch threw one. In 2002, Kawakami got his no-hitter.
Right.
And Yamamoto threw his in 2006. And that's the list.
And then they had the perfect game, the combined perfect game. And the combined Japan perfect series, game which doesn't count.
Game 5?
Game 5. It was game the five ultimate the game of the 2007 Japan series.
Right. So, but, Kenta, he threw a good game. The one run that scored, though... Because it was a 1-0 game right. For a long time. I think they ended up winning 2-0.
Right.
The first run should not have scored.
It should not have scored. What, because, do you mean it was a scoring error?
Because the runner got on Yoshihiro Maru of the Carp, hits this dunker in the center that falls in front of Hichori Morimoto, who's got the best arm in the outfield.
Okay.
And he's shallow.
Yeah.
And he fires a strike to the catcher. It was Toshiki Kurobane.
Okay.
He dropped the ball. They had him dead to rights. It was going to be a close enough play.
Okay.
But they had him dead to rights, and Kurobane drops the ball. That's how the first run scored.
And
Giancarlo Alvarado,
former Carp,
takes the loss. That's a really tough luck loss, because that run shouldn't have scored.
Yep. Well, it shouldn't have, but it did. So,
it did.
So the answer is, it should have, because he dropped the ball. The answer is, yeah, it was unlikely as all heck.
You're so mean.
No, I'm just saying.
It shouldn't have scored.
Well,
but
it depends.
Accidents
happen. This depends when you start that timeline of events. What point shouldn't it have scored? When he hits the ball, yeah, you don't take a chance. But the fact is, he dropped the ball, so the guy who took the chance deserves to score. It was a bad choice, probably.
Probably, but
the run. But he got it. It turned out to be this is one of the things that kind of infuriates me about Japanese baseball. They reward people for lucky results.
Oh, definitely.
And punish people for
doing
the right
thing
when you get the wrong result.
But not getting a good result, exactly. You hit the ball on the screw sometime. And
you hit it right at somebody. They said, oh, you're in a slump, aren't you?
Yeah. You do that four times in a game, and you do that three times in a week, and... And you don't get a mix of hit in there. The beat writers are saying, hey, how are you going to get out of this slump?
You get fooled four times, and you get an infield single, a double that falls in, wind-blown double, and a couple of bloop RBI singles, and you're standing on the podium, and the GM's throwing money in your face.
That's right. Well, I tell you who's throwing, not wanting to throw any more money in the Giants' faces are the owners, because those guys are slumping big time. They won today.
Yep.
They won today, but they're having their...
Having trouble scoring runs.
They're having trouble getting it going. Is there some Viagra for baseball players?
I deal in supplements. I don't know about the blue pills, dude. It's all fairly natural.
Maybe they can do this. They can
I think Rami,
they can go, go out on the side of the road and beg for runs.
No, I don't think that's going to work. I think maybe maybe Rami Chand stopped giving him all the goodies he was bringing in the park.
I don't know what it is. I mean, there's a team that can't score and is losing, and then there's a team that's scoring runs and losing anyway, and that's the Lions. And I mean, a couple of friends, I mean, one a Giants fan, one a Lions fan,
they're
ready to throw those teams out of the window already, you know?
Well, that's because they're fans.
Yeah.
And you get frustrated. And you know, it's like, you know, that's what it means to be a fan is to have infinite expectations for today.
Which and comes
then,
every day.
And the ultimate and then the ultimate dejection when things don't work out today. But you can be in the basement and it's outhouse to the penthouse tomorrow. Things can turn around in a heartbeat. If you're a fan, because everything is immediate, you know.
Well, I understand it. I mean, you know, you can't think about jumping off bandwagons after 10 days, people.
Well, not unless you're wearing a safety helmet. Because that might hurt.
I'll tell you this. What Bobby Valentine said the year before he left, that he likes to use the first 2 months to evaluate his team. Now, I kind of think this was a lot of Bobby babble that we get, because we get
Bobby
a lot of Bobby babble.
Bobby babble.
We get it. It's out there. It floats around the room. You know, you got to duck out of the way sometimes. Or it splashes
babble
on you. It's like.
But I didn't say that.
But you know what?
Bobby, I love you. You know that.
I love you too, Bobby. But I mean, you get paid to understand what your players can do and what they can't do. And you need to know how to prepare the guys and get the guys ready to play. And if it takes you 2 months to really evaluate your team, now, that's what he said, but maybe what he meant was more along the lines of evaluate how they're playing at a particular time and what their status is at that, you know, how they're coming into that season. Because every season's different. Guys prepare differently. Some guys who had a lot of success might not work as hard. Some guys who didn't have a lot of success might work harder, and they come into spring training in different situations. I don't know.
And I think what you just hit right now is the key to that, the last part, different situations.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and Valentine, and I've said this probably more times than anybody cares to hear, his specialty is working with that person who was overlooked, you know, the person who could be overlooked, and getting the most out of that guy's ability and trying to pick everybody on the team up. And so when you've got a team and you're trying different combinations, which is how he runs his team, it's not a sheer talent analysis. It's who works well in what situations, who's comfortable doing what, who is raising their level every day in the regular season. And, you know, he works on a fairly deep level. And sometimes... And he also loves his sound bites. so you get these expressions that they're not real explanations.
Bobby Babble.
Okay, if you like, but I'm not gonna say it. I gotta deal with Mr. Valentine. I'll never go that way.
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing. It's it's just, you know, he's gotta answer questions.
Sure.
He's gotta calm down. I mean, you remember that in 2005 when they made that run to the Japan series and won it.
Right.
At the beginning of the season, he had to calm down all the beat writers. You know, they were so excited. They'd come into his office and crowd around, and they were just so hot to start asking questions, and they run race back to the computers.
Yeah, what day, you know, 15th of May, what day are we going to clinch Bennett?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's like, settle down. So, I mean, I understand it. He has to be able to deal with these guys.
Right.
And so things come out of your mouth that they're not prepared.
Well, this is normal for managers.
Yeah.
This is why I tell everybody, have a little sympathy for play-by-play announcers not the analysts, but the play-by-play announcers who have to fill airspace. That it's hard not to put your foot in your mouth now and then. And managers, you know, fair enough, too. They get paid to talk, but it's still a tough job.
Thank God for podcasts where I can extract my toes from my face.
Indeed. You listeners are lucky this is not video.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, I mean, I want to take the time to just tell these guys, look, settle down. It's we're 10 games in. I mean, do we really think that Lotte is this good? I don't. Do we really think that Carp are going to be, you know, playing 600 baseball the rest of the season?
This is what the Carp did last year.
And are the Bay Stars this bad?
No,
I don't think so.
Of course not.
You know, the Carp, this is the same team that last year, essentially the same team that was shut out for 50 consecutive innings.
Right. Well, that was also interleague play, which is a different dynamic in Japan.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I don't care what league play, if all the players are on the same field in Japan, then they should be about the same level. And
you
should be able to get a run, you think. You know,
you should. If the other team is scoring a run, you should be able to. Yeah, okay, I go with that. But and certainly the thing in Japan, I think the dynamic here in baseball is there are two things that are contradicting each other. And one of these is that there's so much chance. I don't want to say random chance, but there's so much chance. And it's very, you know, when a statistician evaluates hitters' chances of getting a hit, they'll express it as hitter A will have there's a 90% chance that he is between let's say a 250 hitter and a 280 hitter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what it means is there's an excellent chance that a 250 hitter could hit 330 one year. It happens. These things happen. So there's so much chance, and the smaller the sample size, the greater the impact of chance on the stats, on the results. You know, a drop ball, good pitches to hit, you know, good conditions to hit in, whatever. Anyway, so that's one dynamic, is the element of chance. And the other dynamic is the fact that real events have real impact on the pennant race. And if you get behind, it's sometimes easy to stay behind.
You're way behind in the case of Oklahoma, but
yeah.
I mean
there are other factors, and the other is that you have to win games. And whether the losses are a result of bad luck or bad timing or bad whatever, or you know, bad board under a bad sign, you really don't have any. It doesn't matter. It doesn't give you. You don't get extra wins for having bad luck.
Well, I'll tell you this about the bad luck Bay Stars, playing in this stadium that we know yields a lot of runs each year.
Yes.
And the fact that they couldn't score for 47 consecutive innings, they got a couple runs in the ninth inning today. So.
Okay.
In fact, the greatest story of all was, I guess...
The greatest story ever told.
The greatest story of all for them to... I mean, because they would have tied a record being shut out three consecutive games. But Nomura, the skipper of the Carp, decided that...
They were shut out three...
They would have been.
And the Carp went 52 innings without scoring a run?
Well, that was an interleague. The difference in that,
Central,
I think, was the interleague. This would have been a central league.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that. Okay.
So, Skipper decided today that they weren't going to use Dennis Sarfati.
Okay.
And they sent out Imamura to pitch.
Okay. Yeah, and I like Imamura.
He's a run factory. He's a run maker.
Oh.
He's like in his little hut there, like a shoemaker, like Geppetto or whatever his name is, Pinocchio. He's like carving away at runs for other teams. I mean, what was his ERA a couple of years ago? I think it was 15. I mean, he didn't pitch that much, but it was 15.
It was 249, okay.
His career ERA is over 5. I mean, they had a 5-run lead, so I guess they figured he couldn't give up the 5 runs in one inning.
Which is a good bet. Which is a very, in my opinion, the smartest thing Kenjiro Nomura has done in the last year. Oh, I'm harsh on him.
Well,
I do like him. He's showing signs of learning about his job.
I think today he was just so nice to the Bay Stars to send out Imamura so that they could get a run.
Yeah.
And no doubt.
Charity. Charity beans on the road in Yokohama.
That's right. And Norihiro Nakamura was a guy who knocked it in with a double. It was just nice to see. It was nice to see him get around.
Well, he's gotten a lot of RBIs this year.
Really?
But you know,
probably got them all because they're not scoring.
Well, I got a bunch in Osaka Dome where he used to play. Anyway,
the
thing about the Bay Stars is the same. You know, the park effects in Japan. Really, you know, the park effects really affect how we view teams' offense. I won't come out and say all the people who told me what a solid offensive team the Carp were when they played in Shimin Kyujo, because it was a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they moved their ballpark, the offense went in the tubes. They changed to a livelier ball the next year. Oh, the Carpenter's offense is better. And then they changed to the dead ball. Oh, the Carp's offense has died again. It was, you know, they didn't know... know what was going on. They've had a bad offense, and the Bay Stars are the same thing. They have traditionally had bad offenses because they're fooled by the guy's numbers, the raw batting numbers, the raw batting results. Oh, this guy's hitting well. But the Bay Stars don't even score that many runs for playing in one of the best hitters' parks in Japan.
Well, the Giants aren't scoring either, and that was a big surprise to me. I thought they would be better offensively, a little bit more consistent. Some guy, I can't even remember who's hitting. It was one guy in their lineup who's hitting, and the rest of them kind of out there. But, of course, I'm listening to a radio broadcast the other day, and who's the guy they single out? If this guy starts hitting, they'll all start hitting. And if he doesn't hit, then they've got to take him out. Who do you think that was? Exactly, the foreign player, John Belk.
Of course.
I'm like, what are you guys talking about? First of all, you stick him in the number two hole. What does it matter if he's hitting, or not hitting?
Wow, you're like a Japanese manager. Get that lousy guy in the number two hole because he's only getting there to bunt.
Well, no. I'm just saying you stick him in the number two hole and then you say that, the announcers have the gall to say he's the key guy if he starts hitting and they all will. What is that?
First of all,
it doesn't matter where you put him.
And it also doesn't matter if he's hitting or not because we know one guy hits and the rest of the team doesn't catch fire. They're not Tinder. Now this happens in innings. Because there are dynamics with the defense. There are dynamics with the pitcher who's suddenly watching it. One of my favorite observations in baseball is that very often a pitch that shouldn't be hit because it's too good is often followed by a pitch that shouldn't be thrown.
Or a pitch that shouldn't be missed.
and vice versa. And a lucky hit begets, a lucky hit begets easy hits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a dynamic. It doesn't happen in games. It can. If one guy's consistently good and dependable, everybody can relax and they don't have to be the guy to do it. But John Bowker's a first-year player. Anybody who thinks he's the guy who's going to fuel the Giants' offense, you guys better wash your contact lenses. He never did that before.
It's just announcers just looking for an easy out, so to say.
Yeah,
so
indeed.
And they
pick on the foreigner.
Just like you said, they have to fill airspace, and they don't even know what comes out of their mouth sometimes. But that
God, I hate it when people do that. Yikes! There it goes again.
Yeah, well, okay. Obviously he was having a rough start. I think he had one hit and 20-some-odd at bats, and they did take him out of the lineup today, and they won the game. So that doesn't bode well.
Well, the favorite story about the foreigner who couldn't hit was...
Another former Giant?
Another former Giant, a third baseman, and he ended up playing for the Boston Red Sox after that. But he basically, the chairman of the Giants, Mr. Nabetsune, Tsuneo Watanabe, decided he couldn't play, so they replaced a guy who failed to hit, who failed to get a good swing in 20 at-bats, with a guy who failed to get a good swing in about 2,000 minor league at-bats and about 1,000 central league at-bats, Kazushige Nagashima.
Yes.
They replaced a guy who they thought couldn't hit with a guy they knew couldn't hit. Because the first guy was a foreigner and the other guy was the manager's son.
So sometimes it just doesn't make sense. They just make moves. But the Lions they're not hitting great, but they were hitting and they got some runs. Enough runs to probably maybe win a game, considering how runs seem to be down this year. Oryx has set a team record with no home runs through 8 games. I don't know if they hit one on Sunday or not. I haven't seen one.
That's even with Lee DeHoe.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that. But
don't be.
They had some leads with that. The newcomer Enrique Gonzalez blew, and he didn't just blow him; he blew him up.
Okay.
He blew. He had 3 save chances. He blew 2 of them. So they put him out there today in a losing cause, and he had a scoreless inning, which is good for him because he needed it. But yeah, I don't know. how good their bullpen is, and I was picking them to win based on the fact that, I thought that their bullpen problems were going to be solved. But again, it's early. We don't know. It took a guy named Son Donio a long time, like almost a whole season. He was with the Dragons.
I remember Son.
And his first season was awful. He was a fire starter. You put him on the mound.
What year was that, Dan? Was that 86?
I believe it was 98. 98 or 97. 97.
I'm going to guess 97. I'm going to guess when Takagi was the manager.
I'm guessing
and then, 97. And then when Hoshino came, it changed.
Yeah. No home runs for the Buffaloes in the Sunday game, so they've gone a club record. Now, I mean, you know, it looks like, I don't know, if the bat. Remember we talked about the bat being a little bit different. Maybe that is taking its toll, too. Because
well, you remember last year we had a slew of home runs the first week of the season.
Yeah, what's the problem with the ball, they said. Same old ball as usual. And then, shoo. We lost a lot of runs. So, yeah, I mean, so in the end, how do you really evaluate your favorite team, whether it's winning or whether it's losing? When do you make your bandwagon decision?
When do you decide to jump off with or without a parachute?
I say wait a good month, all right, and look at your starters and check out your new guys and see how they fit in. See if they're moving guys over. See if they're playing defense. See how they run. See if they're doing the little things. And the little things, eventually, if you keep doing the right things, will lead to better results. Now, it won't guarantee anything.
Right.
But, you know, don't make decisions on wins and losses all the time. I mean, look at, see if guys are having productive outs when there are guys on base.
Right.
See if they're trying to go to the right side. Try to look and see what they're doing. Don't just look at the result of the play. And it's hard to do that when you just see a box score.
Sometimes. Sure, it's impossible to do when you see a box score.
Well, I mean, you can see a ground ball to the right side, and you can see a guy moved over, but you can't see if
the, you can't see what the pitch is he's trying to hit or Anyway, so in fact, there's always that problem is that you can't see everything. So you do have to sort of see what you can and try to make judgments on that. I think that's certainly wise. I look for, you know, being me, and want to look for big events that signal that there are issues. That, okay, one issue, one thing that would signal there's serious problems is a lot of games lost. Really good teams don't tend to have 5-game losing streaks.
Okay.
Really good teams don't tend to have 5-game losing streaks. Not hard and fast, but the best teams will not because they're just too good. Okay, so that you see that, and that means, okay, probably they're not as good as we thought they were going to be. That they have issues that they have not settled. Okay, and how long it's going to take them to get it. Now, another thing you want to do is to see if they're doing the right things. See if the manager's doing the right things. Is he showing confidence in his guys? Is he, you know, running around the house like it's on fire? You know, if it's a case, you know, you want to shout, "Don't panic, Mr. Man-wearing," or not. You know, or, you know, if somebody's going, "Oh, it's a calamity," like, you know, then that's a problem. And, you know, you can't be a slave to the situation. You know, so.
I agree. I mean, I certainly don't think that, I mean, even with the Giants being shut out 4 out of 5 games.
that in itself is not as much a sign.
It doesn't bode well, but like you say that good teams, that it doesn't happen to them, or good teams don't lose. I say that
it rarely
it
happens.
Could.
It can. Sure it can. Of course it
can. And because it can, you know, they're still a good team. I think they're still going to be good. I just think it's going to take time. They've got a lot of new pieces. They've got Murata, who, you know, if you talk to some scouts, he's a little bit iffy. They've got the new kid, Bowker. You know, Sakamoto is, you know, they're without Ramirez, who is really a calming presence in there.
I've said it and I'll say it again. I think they're going to miss him being there, telling everybody calm down and take it easy and don't, you know, don't worry about the results, worry about the method.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's easy to say when you're not playing for Yokohama. Although you're probably saying the same thing in Yokohama. So anyway, the other thing, the big thing that I look at, if I see a team that's doing well, you know, if you see a team winning a lot of games, the chances of a bad team, the chances of an ordinary team winning 10 games in a row are almost non-existent. So many things have to go right.
It's true. But even that happens. I mean, I saw in the major leagues last year a bad team won 10 games in
Who?
A row.
Tell me
with
the bad
San Diego. Pretty sure either San Diego or the Cubs. One
they
of
did.
Those two.
It happens. This is something that happens about once every 40 years.
Well, I think every season you can find a bad team, but I don't know that they get to 10.
No, 10 is pretty
maybe
much
that's the magic number.
It is
okay.
Pretty much the magic number. The chances of a 500 team winning 10 games in a row is something on the order of one in some 100,000.
I believe it. So, I believe it. Because too many bad things can happen. And you're assisting them. You're helping them happen if you're a bad team.
Well, yeah.
You're contributing to the bad things happening.
Okay, anyway. So, yeah, that's a, but again, five games. Yeah, it's not the kiss of death. It in itself doesn't mean anything, but it is an indicator of a team that has issues. The Giants had issues coming into the season. I mean, they went into the season with no offense at second. Well, whenever Fujimura is playing second base, they got no offense. I don't know if Mr. Har is panicking yet. He says he doesn't panic. I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
2003, he definitely froze up. He had the deer in the headlights when Mr. Ishii. Ishige, his closer, stopped closing. And he just kept throwing him out there. And then I asked him at the All-Star game, what's your plan? He said, well, you can't win a pennant if your closer doesn't do the job. And so his answer was just to keep throwing him out there.
Yeah, well, he's not doing the job, so the plan is to not win the pennant?
It was essentially to not win the pennant because... So anyway,
all right.
Anyway, moving along.
So just take your time and evaluate your team. Let a month at least go by before you make your bandwagon decision. But just
give them 4 weeks before you write them off for eternity.
No. Write them off for eternity. We had a guy at the office who's given up on his hockey team, so I understand it. But see, it's the end of the season. They're not going to make the playoffs, so it's a good time to.
But he changed alliance. They changed allegiance.
No, he just abandoned them.
He sold out to the New York Rangers, dude.
Oh gosh,
he's wearing a Rangers T-shirt.
Well, we'll get him on a hockey podcast. Let's talk about something that happened this past week, which was there were 12 stolen bases in a game in Sendai.
Was it the water? Radioactivity.
Oh, that's not even funny.
I'm sorry, I don't know what.
That tied a 52-year-old record. Now, the good news for the gutty little Eagles was that they had five of the stolen bases, but the bad news is that they gave up seven
and
stolen
lost
bases.
The game.
Well, losing is, you know... No, actually, they won the game 6-5.
Oh,
yes.
Good for them.
They won the game 6-5. They tipped two out of three from the Hawks.
Okay, yes, that's true. And the thing with stolen bases is... they're easy. Stolen bases are noticeable, but they're important for the ability to steal a base in a crucial situation. Mm-hmm. But stolen bases themselves, and in counting numbers, are more or less meaningless. They're very small factors in ball games.
I didn't actually count and look and see how many of those guys who stole bases scored, but it was a 6-5 game. And I read an article, the Yomiuri published an article that I took the time to read, and one of the coaches, I don't remember his name at the moment, said, base stealing, prevention of base stealing is communication between the pitcher and the catcher. It's not one of the guy's fault. It's both of their responsibilities to take care of, which we all know.
All of us, yes.
We all know that, right?
Yeah, essentially.
But my question is, they haven't changed. I mean, all the pitchers that they had, and I don't... This series had a bunch of stolen bases where the Hawks just ran wild.
Right.
I think Matsuda's leading the league right now in steals.
Well, he stole
a bunch
of bases last year,
He's got seven already, so he's way ahead of that pace.
Okay.
Same catcher, mostly same pitchers. I don't get this big change. I don't know what's happening out there. Any ideas?
I think it's culture. I mean, the Hawks have a tradition of A, being very fast, and B, giving up a lot of stolen bases. For them, it's just the natural... It's the Hawks in their natural habitat. Eagles, same thing. Maybe it's the bird thing. I don't know. It's the... I have liked them in the past. I like Shima to some degrees. He's not the worst catcher in the league. I mean, obviously, Hosokawa was catching that game, so he's a guy who can throw out base stealers.
Yeah.
But, yeah, an off day, and they were worrying about other things. So the communication issue, yeah, it's kind of a fluke. It's kind of a fluke team thing. But these are both teams. Yuji Sawa is very fast, and he's learning to steal bases. So.
Yeah, he
and he was on base a bunch of times.
Yeah,
so that's a big problem.
Duckton's center fielder, Yuji Sawa, he stole three in the game, and that was the first time he's ever stolen that much.
Right.
Or that many in a game, and that's good, you know, that's good for them, and they won the game, they scored the runs they needed. They've been struggling too, losing their first three at home. They finally had a home series to start the season.
Right.
And they lost all three to Chiba.
Yeah.
And then the Hawks come in, and you think, oh man, they're going to be 0-6.
Yep.
And they won the first two games of that series, which was really good for them. And they had a chance to win that third game, so
right.
they have returned to the gutty little Eagles. We will continue to call them that until
the first three games were the gutted little Eagles.
They were the gutted little Eagles. That's right. Thanks for stealing my line.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Well,
I'll be happy to do it again next time.
I'll let you introduce this topic.
Okay. Right. Well, last week we had one of our favorite, well, I don't know if he's my favorite player, but he's a player you really have to pull for. He's just, he's very understated.
He's one of my favorite players because he's in his 40s.
Well, we do have to root for the old guys.
That's right.
We have to root for the old guys and the underdogs. So, the old dogs and the new dogs and the poor dogs. And,
you know, all the dogs. And the,
that's right.
Three dogs.
Three dogs a night. Okay. Sure.
The dogs in the doghouse.
Okay, yeah, anyway. So Shinya Miyamoto.
Let the dogs out.
That's right. Bahamut? Okay, now three. Shinya Miyamoto is a really rare player. He was he took a while to get going in his career. And not only that, he didn't start till he was 26 years old. He came out of university, and then he was a corporate league star. He was a university star and a corporate league star. And he's on the verge of getting 2,000 hits.
Amazing.
He's got, I think he's just got about a dozen hits left to 2,000. He had
he started
the season with 22, and he had 8 hits through his first 5 games. Okay, so he was hitting 400 or 600 or something. Anyway, when he gets to 2,000, he's going to be the second player to finish university and come out of the corporate leagues before joining the Tokyo Yakult Swallows. to get 2,000 hits. And the second player to do it with the Swallows, and the second player to do it in Japanese baseball history, the other being his former teammate and a defensive standout and a former Swallows manager, Atsuya Furuta.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me trivia.
Oh.
I'm glad you didn't, because I would have never guessed him.
Oh, sure you would have. Okay, now the other question, who is the other guy who went to university and went through corporate league ball? But he didn't graduate from university who has 2,000 hits.
He didn't graduate, but he went to corporate
league ball. He quit university in the middle, and then he went to play for Toshiba, which was then like the corporate league powerhouse and supplied Japan's national manager to the Olympic team every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that player was?
Give me a team, dude.
Lotte Orions.
Ochiai.
Hiromitsu Ochiai, your man.
Isn't that amazing? We're connected, dude. Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed it unless you told me the team.
Okay. Well, anyway, it was Hiromitsu Ochiai, so those are the three. And he had to cut out of college early to make that record. But Miyamoto didn't, and Furuta didn't. And Miyamoto set a new record for consecutive score errorless chances at third base.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who's he doesn't look a day over 60. And he had three.
You're just mean.
I got it.
Didn't you blow people up on another show? Are you gonna start mobbing bombs?
No, I love him. He's the nicest guy.
He is.
He got a little snippy once. If I asked him what he did with Omar, if he kept Omar Vizquel's bat to hit home runs with, he says, "Oh, what are you? Get off the bat! Stop talking about the stupid bat." But anyway, he's a great guy, and he. He's now the best defensive third baseman in the Central League.
Yeah.
And he's 41 years old, 42?
41.
41.
I believe.
And he's won his third straight Golden Glove at third base. He has three Golden Gloves at shortstop. He's done everything. He's a .280 career hitter, and last year he hit .305, I think.
He's one of the hardest guys to strike out in MTB.
Yeah, and he still runs pretty well. He's he has the ultimate old, well, I won't say the ultimate old player's skills because he doesn't walk a lot, but his central skill is basically hitting good pitches and taking a walk if he has to.
Right.
Putting the ball in play and hitting, you know, doing the little things. He does everything, he does pretty much everything right, which is why he was the former Japan national team captain for so long in the two Olympics.
That's right.
Olympics and the first WBC.
Yep. Yeah. Remember it well. Well, congratulations to him, and the Swallows are doing all right. So
the kids are all right.
They won today, so yeah, they're doing all right.
All right.
All right. So we want to do fielding questions. I don't know if I should play the music or not. I'll mull it over. We did have a comment on the Facebook page. Anthony wrote us and he asked, last week when Masahiro Yamamoto, the old pitcher, who is he, 46 years old?
He's not 60 yet. He's not older than me.
Made the start against the rookie Yuya Nomura of the Hiroshima Cubs.
Right.
Not only was Nomura not born when Yamamoto debuted in the MPB.
What, you're going to tell me his father wasn't born?
Well, no.
Okay.
It wasn't until 3 years later
that
Nomura was born.
Right.
So he asked how many other pitchers or other situations have been where one pitcher is facing a pitcher who wasn't born.
Two starting
pitchers were facing each other in a game. And I sent you the email, obviously, and you had no idea. I don't even know how to go about checking this thing.
I know, we'd have to look... I guess I could if I plugged in the starting age of every starter who pitched against Kimiyasu Kudo, we could probably come up with a half a dozen guys.
Yeah, that was my guess right away. That was whoever in the past 3 or 4 years, well, maybe 4 or 5 years, was a new rookie pitcher starting against Kimiyasu Kudo.
Kudo or Shimoyanagi could be easily, or Yamamoto.
He's pretty crusty. Yamamoto, yeah, he's up there. He's nearing cane age.
Cane in your butt pretty soon. He can't brush his teeth with his left hand, but he can sure whack smack your butt with the right.
All right. So, and then to address Michael Westbay's question from last week, I checked with some beat writers, and they told me the same story that we talked about last week, which was their ball originally was changed to be something closer to the one being used in international play, not necessarily the major leagues.
Right.
And that ball that they use in international play is slightly different from the one used in the major leagues, and that's why we have that difference. Other than that, we're going to have to ask the commissioner once when we see a little decrepit old man walking up confused and looks like a wandering guy who's escaped his old folks' home. And then if we see
him wearing a very nice suit.
Yep. Freshly pressed.
Yeah.
We will ask him. Other than that, I don't know that we can answer that question any better than we did last week. So, but we did want to mention it because I promised that we would.
And John always keeps his promises. I want to be like John.
I keep some of them in my pocket, keep some of them in my shoe, you know.
Oh, man, don't talk about that one. You said you were never going to talk about that one, dude. Okay, let's get on with the email.
All right, a reminder, you can send us comments via the Facebook page, or you can use an MP3 file so that we can play it on the show.
Yeah, baby, MP3s.
We love them. You know, you can use an IC recorder or a WavePad sound editor as one of the free downloads you can get temporarily on
the phone. Use your iPhones, dude.
Use your iPhone. Anybody with an iPhone or an other mobile devices, you can probably tape on those and send us your questions. Send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com and we'll get it on the show. Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right.
Enjoyed it.
I get a mull over that one. Talk to you probably in 2 weeks.
All right. Enjoy your baseball.
Enjoy it. Mm-hmm.